Today is June the 6th, 2023. I'm Jen Widener with the Jeffersonville Township Public Library. Conducting interviews for Some Like It Hot, Tales from the Firehouse. I'm here today with Lucas Coward of the Jeffersonville Fire Department. What is your title with the fire department?
I'm a sergeant.
Okay.
I just got promoted to sergeant here at the beginning of this year. There are several retirees. I think there's five retirees from the department, so there's a lot of internal promotions, and hopefully we'll have some new hirings here this year too. So,
well, congratulations on your promotion.
Thank you.
So everyone has a story to tell, and I wanted to give Jeffersonville firefighters the chance to share their stories. So how long have you been with the department?
I've been with the department for 6 years, and this March it was 6 years. I was hired in 2017.
So what made you want to become a firefighter?
It's kind of an interesting story, I guess. I was involved with a youth group at my church, and the youth group leader was a volunteer firefighter at Georgetown, and in Georgetown, Indiana, there's a bunch of guys in the group that were all interested in being firefighters. And I mean, I've always had an interest in public service. I hadn't really decided what I was going to do at the time. I was early in high school. And I'd thought about being a firefighter, police officer, something like that before, but then I'd kind of set it aside. Well, he started a program at that department in Georgetown for some of those younger guys, and all my friends were doing it, so I was like, I'll see what it's about. And then a couple of years later, everybody else is gone, and I'm still doing it. I just kind of fell in love with it. And it just kind of checked all the boxes for me as far as, like, making a difference in the community. And it's an interesting profession that, you know, every day is a little bit different. It keeps you on your feet. And, you know, you get to be active, and you get to do something every day. And I appreciate that. So it's kind of odd that I found that. I kind of stumbled into it, I guess. But also, it was something that I had considered from a young age. Just, like I said, all the benefits of it.
So if you weren't a firefighter, what do you think you would be doing?
Well, I have a degree in advertising. That's what I went to. I went to IUS and got that degree. And I had decided that I wanted to be a firefighter before that, but I also wanted to have some kind of a backup plan, you know. And I started applying for a lot of departments in the area as I was finishing up college. And fortunately, I got on here in Jeffersonville, and That was the end of it. So if I hadn't have got on the fire department, I probably would have either ended up somewhere else, or I would have gone into the advertising world, which I'm glad that I'm a
firefighter. Yes, yeah. It seems a little bit, not, I don't want to say easier, but yeah.
Yeah.
So it is a process to get on the fire department, right?
Yeah.
It's not like a normal job where you just apply and you interview and that's it, right?
Yeah.
So can you take me through, like, what that process is?
So the Jeffersonville Fire Department has what's called a merit system. And so there's a lot of departments in the state have adopted this system. And basically, it's a way that they get the best candidate for the job in the most fair way possible. So the merit system is made up of a panel of There's a panel of merit board members that are community members that are elected or appointed by the firefighters union, the administration of the fire department. The mayor has an appointee, and then the city council has one or two appointees as well. So there's this group of people that are in charge of the merit system, and then that group, along with the state testing agencies, come up with a written test that is supposed to be unbiased and kind of give you an overview of the candidates, what would make them good for the job. And then there's also an oral interview that's conducted by those merit board members that has basically a check. They have questions in an interview, and then there's like a checklist of what they want you to say that will get you the most points. So it's basically trying to be objective, but it comes out very awkward when you're doing that
interview.
I was
going to say, like, how awkward and
nerve-wracking
is that?
So you walk in for your interview, and you're expecting to have a conversation with somebody, and they hand you a binder with questions in it, and they're like, okay, answer question number one. And you just kind of have to
on the fly,
yeah. So fortunately, I was pretty determined to get the job. You know, I put in a lot of effort ahead of time.
When you'd already kind of been in the firefighting field
yeah.
as the volunteer.
Yeah. I had been involved in firefighting already, and so I'd prepped with some people that worked here and there or whatever. And so I kind of knew what to expect with that interview, and so I practiced ahead of time with my dad and my wife, like having them ask me questions.
Absolutely.
And trying to give an answer like it would in there. So I practiced a lot, went in for the interview, and so you take the written test, they give you a score there. I did pretty well on the written test, and I went for the interview. Did the interview, like I said, it's just such an awkward format. Afterwards, I was like, there is no way I'm going to be last on the list.
There's we always feel that way after we interview, don't we?
There's no way that I got this job. And then it comes back out, and I got the third place on that list, which I think they hired four people off the list that I was on. So I was in a good position to get hired. And that was the summer of 16 that I went through the process. And then, obviously, they're waiting for everybody to retire at the beginning of the year. And the retirees that my group replaced, there was Phil Lovin, who was a battalion chief. His family is very tied to the city. There's Lovins in the fire department,
everywhere
the police department,
is Lovins.
Home Depot, everywhere you go, there's a Lovin.
That's awesome.
And Jeffrey still works at the department, too, his son. So Phil and Doug Sneed, and Doug's son still works on the department, too, Brent. And then Denny France, those were the three guys that retired the year that I got hired. And I can't remember which one specifically I was hired to replace. I think they told me, but that was the group that left that I got in on. So pretty cool.
Did you have to do a physical test too?
Yeah. So we require it's called the CPAT. It's actually a nationwide. It's a candidate physical ability test, and it's basically a nationwide standard that departments across the country have agreed. Like, this is the basic minimum of what it takes to become a firefighter. And so you can find those classes throughout the state or whatever. I think I went over to Kentucky to do mine, and they give you a card at the end of it. Basically says that you're fit to be a firefighter, and then if you apply to different departments, you can present that, and so most departments will take that. That's what their physical
that's the standard
is.
Yeah.
There are some departments still, like Louisville they have their own physical agility test. It's very difficult. I went through their physical test as well, so that's what we require for Jeffersonville.
Okay. So what are some challenges of your job?
The biggest challenge, I think, and I'll talk about a couple, but the biggest challenge I think that a lot of firefighters face is mental health, I guess. And that there's a lot of depth to that answer. Like, primarily, as far as the job goes, it's very easy to fall into complacency because we don't. Every day, we're not every day going to fires. We're not every day stretching our skills, you know. So it's very easy for guys to get comfortable and to get to the point where they're not interested in the job anymore. If you go to a house and like the guys that, you know, the first day you might be like, okay, here we're going to train, and then 3 years later you're like, I don't really want to do anything today. And then guys will get into this sense of complacency, and they will get bitter about the job because they're not active, they're not being progressive, they're not learning, they're not taking in new information. And I think that's a challenge, is just to stay on top of what you need to know for the job and to keep the passion for the job as well. Because, you know, I'm very passionate about my career, and I very much enjoy what I do, and I think that it's very important and it makes a difference to the community, and I want to stay that way throughout my career. And I think a lot of guys, you know, they'll work a ton of overtime, and they'll just be there all the time, till they get burnt out really.
When
really
it's
quickly.
Easy to do if you're there all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah, and so I think that to combat that, you know, you got to have a good work-life balance, and I make sure that when I'm at home, you know, I'm at home with my kids, and we, you know, I do the things that recharge me mentally. Which leads into the mental health aspect as far as like what you see, you know, like there are certainly some things that will stick with you in this job. Some things that are, I think on a daily basis, we see things that would be a life-changing moment for most people to encounter. And we see those things two or three times a day, you know. So, like, to deal with that, a lot of, I think the temptation is to kind of hold that in and to, you know, not, and to not talk about it, be tough about it or whatever. And, but I think the first step in combating that I take is to recognize it. Like, first off, you know, my captain that I've been with for a long time, Jason Wiesenauer, he's very proactive in mental health as far as recognizing the signs of PTSD and, like, just knowing some of the things that I encounter, like, what that is, you know, because mentally you start to feel things and you start to think things. Like, for example, one of the things that I often struggle with is, like, you see car accidents, you see traumatic events, and you start to think, like, well, that's going to happen to my family, you know, and you just have this overwhelming negative feeling,
like,
that something bad is going to happen, you know. And you know, like, my family has always been kind of like, you know, you feel off about something, like, you should act like, I don't feel like you should go to work today, like, I feel like something bad is going to happen, you know. And for a normal person, and you have a bad feeling like that, then maybe that's something to pay attention to. But when I started to realize that I have that all of the time, like, I always feel like something bad is going to happen, at some point I realized, like, that's a sign of PTSD and mental stress. And then, like I said, the first sign of combating that is just recognizing that. And I'm able to be like, okay, this is just my brain going a little
bit. Your brain's overworked.
It's overthinking that, you know. So that's kind of a thing that I struggle with on a regular basis. But recognizing it is the first sign. And then, like I said, when I'm home, I get a lot of enjoyment out of spending time with my family.
You get to recharge.
Yeah, I make sure that
physically.
I do those things. I do a lot of stuff outdoors, hunting and fishing. And I make sure to set aside time to do that, to where I am mentally healthy, I guess.
But it's very nice to hear a firefighter, a male firefighter, say, like, I need to take care of my mental health. Because, as we know, like, I'm not dissing males in any way, shape, or form, but I think it's harder.
Sure.
To be open.
Yeah.
And express, like, I'm this firefighter, I should be tough, I should never have problems. But you have a really good captain who, his wife is into mental health,
so. And I think that carries through the department, too. Like, you know, he was that voice for me, and then as new people come on, like, I can be that voice for them. And I think that's the things that make true changes, you know.
I mean, and it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
Like, anybody, but, I mean, what you guys see, what you guys go through, it is very traumatic. And if you're not, if you're just compartmentalizing that and not talking about it or getting help, that's, I mean, that leads to addiction and other things. And we don't want any of that for our firefighters or anybody, but
Yeah.
So what are some of, okay, first of all, how long does it take to get used to working 24-hour shifts?
You get used to it a lot faster than you would think. It has become one of my favorite things about the job. I got into firefighting before this, so I'd already had probably 5 years of experience as far from that, from a scheduling standpoint, knowing what the schedule is like. I worked part-time there at Georgetown while I was going to college, so I kind of worked that shift schedule a little bit and got used to it. And truthfully, that was one of the first jobs that I had, and then I got this job, so that's kind of the schedule that I've always known. So you say, how hard is it to get used to it? And I'm like, well, not hard at all, because that's what I know.
Right.
Yeah. But I really like it, as far as, you know, you spend your time here, and then when you're home, you get to go home, and you get to spend full days with your family. And, you know, being able to get my kids up in the morning and put them to bed at night, and then just spend the entire day, I feel like I get to be more involved as a dad because of that. Now, there are times where I'm gone and, you know, my wife has the kids at home, or I'm missing out on a birthday party or whatever because of the way that the schedule falls. I mean, obviously we have to work holidays and weekends and everything, you know. So you do feel like you're missing out sometimes, but I think that the benefits of having the extended time off at the end of the tour and having full 24 hours off make up for it. So, technically, I guess we work 72-hour weeks, but it doesn't necessarily always – it doesn't feel that bad because when you sleep –
you had times off in between.
Yeah, yeah. So,
what is it you work – 10 days a month, is
that
right?
Yeah, we work 10 days a month. So basically we work, we call it a tour, and it's a 9-day tour, and so we have every other day for 5 of that. So this week we work Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So I worked yesterday, I'm off today for 24, then I'll be back on Wednesday for 24, then off on Thursday, then Friday I'll work another 24, and then after that I'll have 4 full days off. They call that, it's basically, there's different names for the schedules, but that's a modified Kelly schedule. And a lot of departments will do like a 24 on, 48 off. So you work a day, then you're off for 2, and then you come back. But I really like the way that we do it, because you're, that 5 days that you're every other day is kind of exhausting by the end of it. But then having that 4-day weekend, if you will.
But you know, you can plan like a little vacation,
right,
or
you take
whatever.
One day off or get a trade or whatever, and then now you've got almost a full week off that you can go and do something.
That's amazing. So, most people don't get that with regular 9-to-5 jobs. Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic.
And I think that's one of the, I think that is a, not necessarily a hack, but like a perk of the job as far as your mental health goes, if you choose to use it that way. Like I do. Like when I'm off, like I want to be off. You know, a lot of guys will work a bunch of different jobs on the side, or they'll, you know, get in, or they'll come back for overtime or whatever. And I do that very sparingly, just because, like, I think I want to be when I'm here for, I got hired at 22, so I'll probably be here till I'm 52. You know, by the time that I'm there, like, I want to still like it, you know?
Well, exactly.
So you
still want to have that passion and have your mental health intact.
Yeah.
And
so I think it's important to take advantage of that time off, because, you know, like you said, it wears on you after a while, and having some time away is
so. One of my questions is, do you have another job besides firefighting? I mean,
no,
a lot of firefighters
I don't.
Do.
Yeah, a lot of guys do. So my wife works. She works at the NICU downtown, and so we kind of have our schedules balanced to where when I'm off, she's working it. So I spend a lot of time with my kids on my days off, and then my wife is really into flowers, so we have a huge garden at our property, and we're trying to start this year, like, doing a cut flower business, like actually selling bouquets and stuff. So this is what I've been putting a lot of focus into this year, is getting that garden ready. But here and there, you know, I might pick there's a couple guys that do some that have businesses on the side. I might work a day with them or whatever, or here and there, like, you know, some overtime or whatever to do that. But I like I said, I value that so much, of having that recharge time, that I think I've set myself up to financially be to the point where I don't need to, you know.
And your kids will appreciate that when they get older too, that dad was there.
Yeah.
So let's see here. What are some of the best parts of your job?
I think one of my favorite parts of the job is the camaraderie with the guys. Like, it's having another family, you know, and especially if you work with if you have a particular crew that you like a lot, that you spend a lot of time with, you know, it really feels like you have a second family, and that's a lot of fun. I mean, the days that you're at the firehouse, I mean, there are some really tough times and some miserable conditions and some nasty things that you have to go through, but doing it with those people that you appreciate, you know, what you're doing, and that you get along with really well, and that you have that bond with, it just makes it very enjoyable. And I also get a lot out of the making a difference, or feeling like you make a difference, you know. Like I said, my degree was in advertising, and there's certainly a lot more money to be made in there, but, you know, every day you get a chance in this profession to actually do something for somebody that's going to make a lasting difference, you know, and I really appreciate that and get a lot out of that. So
like an advertising, you'd be working for somebody else and for what they want, and like you wouldn't be giving back too much to the community, and you probably wouldn't be liking your coworkers
right.
as much.
Yeah.
What are some of the worst parts of your job?
The worst parts are the there are some really long nights. They can be difficult. You know, you're up every hour all night long, and then you gotta go home and your kids are there waiting for you. Like, you got a full day at home scheduled, you know, and you've been up all night. That can be exhausting. And so just generally the wear of knowing that at any time you could be called upon to go out and do something dangerous or very intense. Like, you don't think about it while you're sitting there, but subconsciously you're always kind of on guard. And that just wears on you after a while. And then also there's a degree of uncertainty, I think, like as far as like what's gonna happen, you know, like on calls and also like in the department. Like, you get on a crew that you really like, and there's a sinking feeling that, you know, like it's gonna be broke up event, like there's gonna have to be moves, you know. Like I just went through that promotional process, and it was kind of like, I know that I need to move forward in my career, but I also really liked where I was, you know. So it's kind of a give and take there, and that's kind of a disappointing part of the job too, is the uncertainty as far as like your crew and who you work with, because it does make a big difference.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, it's like with any job, if you have good people that you work with, it makes it all bearable and fun.
Yeah.
But
I think too that all of the people in our department, we have a lot of really good people, and I think they all, you know, they're all very capable of the job, and they're all very, you know, very capable of getting along with people. And I think that the attitude that you go into working with, whoever that you're working with, makes the biggest difference. You know, you get in and you go out of your way to interact with them and to be passionate about the job and share your passion. Like, it'll bring out what
I want to make sure everybody's okay.
Yeah.
Does somebody need to talk today? Does somebody having a bad day with, you know, whatever?
Sure.
Yeah, it is. It's your family. Yeah. So there might be squabbles every now and then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just human nature. Well, let's see. Is there one call that stands out to you more than the others? We kind of, before we started recording, we kind of alluded to something about on the river.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, I thought about this a little bit on the way over, so I'm sure she's going to probably ask that question. But this is kind of the one that I go to whenever somebody's like, what's the weirdest, most interesting call that you've been on? So this was, I was actually working, I was transferred out to Station 5, and I was assigned to Station 1 as a private there, and I've been transferred to Station 5, which is on Allison Lane there by the high school. And I was working with Josh Kemp that day and Ben Hessen, and you know, we got through the day. And so that one of the calls that we make with the fire department is carbon monoxide alarms or carbon monoxide emergencies, and it's not a very regular call that we get. And when we do get them, it's generally, you know, there's my CO alarm is going off, battery's dead, or they left their car running a little too long, or what, and you just air it up. So you don't usually, we get those calls, they're not most common, and then when we do get them, it's generally not actually something major. So we get a call down at the Admiral's Anchor down there, or the boats are docked, that there's a boat there that's running, and like someone has looked down the hatch and there's someone laying on the floor down there. And so immediately Josh's first thing is like, I bet, he says, probably some kind, because it's a large boat, like a that has a cabin in it. And so he's like, the man is down in the, like in the cabin of the boat. And so as we're on the way there, the dispatch is telling us that he's been working on the boat that day, and the bystanders have said that it's been running for several hours. So we're like, well, this is probably some kind of a a CO emergency. So we immediately, Josh makes the decision to get all of our air packs off as we go on to, you know, give medical support to this guy. And so we get the air packs and the CO monitor. And as we get into that cabin of that boat, I forget the exact number, but it was like around 900, almost 1,000 parts per million of CO, which I think I very well could be wrong about this, but it's somewhere around like the 200 over an extended period of time can be very detrimental to your health. So, I mean, it's a huge concentration of CO. And we get down there and immediately see that this guy is down the stairs in this tiny little boat hatch and like out on the water. So we've walked down the dock, we're on the boat, in the water, and now we've got to get this patient up. So we get him up and then start doing CPR. And then of course there's poop all over the floor. And so you're dragging him up through it's just nasty, like dragging him through trying to get him. So Josh and I are dragging him up the stairs doing CPR. And we start doing CPR in the back of this boat on this guy. And we did all that with our air packs on as well, you know, to go down into the environment. And then we noticed that Ben notices that there's a cat that's down that's with him as well. I mean, and obviously we try to, when we encounter people's pets or animals, we try to treat them like a patient or try to take care of them as well, as long as the proper care is given to the person first, you know. So we got to take care of the person, and Josh is like, well, take care, Ben, you take care of that cat. We carry animal respirators on the truck.
Oh, okay.
So he's like, give that cat some oxygen, see if you can get it revived, you know. Like, maybe we can do something about that. And so Ben starts to try and revive the cat. He's giving it oxygen and, you know, trying to rouse it, and it wakes up just enough to like look at him, makes eye contact, and then bites his thumb, like fangs in, like drawing blood. So now we're out on this boat.
I hate to laugh, but
God, it's just an awful situation. Just a weird like mashup of all different kinds of every odd thing that you could think of just happened. Like out here on this boat doing CPR. Here's a cat bites Ben. Josh and I are trying to do CPR. And then we come to find out that one of the police officers that they got on scene first, now he starts to feel sick because he'd gone down to check on that guy, and now he had gotten CO poisoning as well. So the ambulance gets there, and we're able to get the person onto the patient onto the stretcher and over to the ambulance. And so then we have to start giving care to the police officer as well. And there was just a lot going on there. It was just a weird scene with a lot of obviously very bad situation, but it very much stands out to me. It's like you're probably not gonna ever encounter something exactly like that again.
I mean,
like you'll go to a bunch of fires over your career. Like a fire is a fire is a fire. After a while, they all start to run together. But something like that always, like I'll never forget that until the.
So was the cat okay?
No.
Okay.
No, they had to. The cat was. We brought it back to a degree, and then animal control came, and they ended up having to euthanize the cat. It just didn't make it, and unfortunately the patient didn't make it as well. It's not I tell you that story, it's not a, there are some, not to say humorous aspects of it, but it is an interesting story, but it's reality of the.
It's when fact is stranger than fiction, because nobody could write that and not have all those things happen.
Yeah, it's not. That's why I was debating on whether to tell that story or not, because it's not like a pleasant, funny story by any means. But it is a.
It's reality of what you guys deal with.
If you want to know, you know, an off the wall thing that we would deal with that you would never expect that we would deal with. That's a perfect.
And I think that.
Analogy for it.
The misconception is that all you guys do is fight fires and then sit in the firehouse the rest of the time.
Right.
Well, I know that's not true.
Yeah.
I mean, I see girls' trucks out everywhere. Yeah.
The majority of our job is medical emergencies or, service calls and things. It's rare that we actually get the opportunity to fight a fire, you know.
So that was my next question.
Kind of what we all want to be doing.
Yeah, that's why you became a firefighter, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the misconceptions about firefighting? We see so many shows on TV. I watch all those fire shows. I'm always like, that would never really happen.
Sure.
So what are some of those things that you can think of?
So like that story that I just told you, that's like a, you know, maybe a once in a career type thing that would make it onto one of those TV shows. You're like, well, that, you know, that's a weird thing that happened. And on the TV, that happens every time
every
they come to the firehouse.
That, yeah.
Every call is like that. And it's not like that. You know, most of your calls are, I can't even remember them because, you know, it's a medical assist and you come in and you take some vitals and talk to somebody and get a history and then you go home. And that's the majority of the calls that we make. Or you come and you help with, somebody's water has burst and they don't know how to shut it off. And they're like, all they know to do is call the fire department. They can probably help. And so we end up there to shut off somebody's water that they can't figure out, you know. So that's a misconception as well, that we end up doing that stuff a lot more than...
Not every call is a huge thing like they show on TV.
And I think that the TV shows are pretty dramatic in the firehouse, like as far as the interactions with the people. And not to say that there's not some drama amongst the people that work on the department, because there certainly is, but it's certainly not
TV what they
worthy.
Show on TV. Yeah, that's what I say. If they did like a, you know how they did like On Patrol Live, if they did that for the fire department, people would be like, "What is even? What are we watching?
This is really boring. These
guys
are just playing pickleball.
Really? This is like, I mean, but then when you do have a call, we know you're highly trained to take care
and
of whatever.
That's what I think that. There is a misconception there as well. People are like, well, you guys don't do anything. And then, like my wife gives me a hard time also. She's like, you know, she's at home with the kids. She's like, I bet you probably, like, watched a movie and worked out today. Like, that must be nice. It's like, yeah, like, majority of your day is somewhat leisurely. Like, you do your chores, and you do your training, and then you get some downtime. But I think it all makes up for it in the moments when you are expected to do your job.
Well, there is a big fire or a car accident or something, and then
that's where you really earn your salary there's on those days. So yeah, we do have some downtime on the job that people look down on or whatever, but I think that we kind of make up for it.
And those people would never make it as a firefighter.
Right. Yeah, so. when you come down to that, when you come to that call, you're like, I can do that, you know.
Right. What advice would you give anyone wanting to become a firefighter?
I think that if you're wanting to become a firefighter, first off, understand the job and why you want to do it before you commit to it. A lot of people will say, yeah, I want the time off or the health care benefits or the pension or the schedule or whatever. And like, that's why I want to, like, I want to do that. But they don't understand like what actually the calling of the job is. So look deeply at yourself and think about if that's what you want to spend your life doing, and if that's if that's the kind of lifestyle that you want to live. Because it is a lifestyle, you know. Like you said, you have mental health struggles. Which the schedule can lead to struggles at home. There are certainly difficult aspects of it, and you have to be committed to it. Otherwise, you're not gonna get out of it what you could. So definitely look at yourself and then look at the department that you want to get on. So maybe make a list of a couple of departments that you'd be really interested in working on, and then I would say make sure that you have some kind of a good fallback plan. Like if you're in high school and you wanted to get into firefighting, like make sure that you have some kind of, like, go to a trade school, like learn how to be a plumber, an electrician, or something useful that you can do, or get your college degree in business management or something that would help you, you know, in the ranks of the department, or that you could do on the side once you got hired or whatever. And then spend your time applying to the departments that you want to, and just be proactive and ask questions of people that are on the department, talk to them, because we know the process to get hired, you know, because we've been through it. And most of the guys are pretty happy to share that. I mean, obviously there's a little bit of vetting in there, like, I don't want this person to work with me. I'm not going to tell you everything. But I mean, if somebody comes to us and they're like truly interested and they really want to be a part of the department, you know, a lot of guys are very happy to share tips on how to, you know, how to prepare for those, for the interview process. Because like I said, it is kind of a strange thing. So just do your research on the job and then on the departments that you're interested in and then how to get onto there. And then don't be afraid to put in the time and the effort to prepare for that.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. If it's something that you want, you should be preparing for it. So is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Not that I can think of off the wall without direction, I guess.
All right. Well, thank you for being here today.